They are securitizing your promissory note. Many people know that. They're receiving proceeds from that securitization. Where do the proceeds go? Second escrow account and third escrow account. 10% for you in the second, 90% for them in the third, because they believe they're risking the most in this contract agreement that you signed. So that's why they keep 90% and they start investing that in the third escrow account. The second escrow account is yours, asset escrow. It's under your name and your loan number, but it's not under your social, and that's why you can't see it on your credit report.
Imagine you're a first-time homeowner, which is no small feat in today's market. For years, you scrimped and saved for the down payment. You interviewed realtors to find someone experienced and trustworthy who could help guide you through the confusing process. It's stacks and stacks of paperwork that you have to sign. You worked on your credit score. You sourced pre-approval letters from mortgage brokers. And you went house hunting. You spend your evenings browsing real estate listings, and you gave up your weekends to go to open houses until you found the one. You put in an offer on the house along with an earnest money deposit, and your offer gets accepted. Then you look over contracts. You pay for a home inspection. You get an appraisal, and you pray that your mortgage lender will approve your loan. You negotiate your interest rate, and you start planning your move. Luckily, everything's on track. You place your precious down payment into an escrow account. You sign and notarize your closing documents. And finally, after a grueling months-long process, you get the keys to your very own home. It's a major financial commitment that most Americans don't take lightly. You're smart about the home buying decision and mindful of how you're investing your money. So if you were to stumble upon an ad for a seminar that claims to teach people about how their mortgages could entitle them to a massive tax refund, you're intrigued. You sign up and attend. At this seminar, you meet a charismatic speaker who promote themselves as some kind of financial advisor or tax professional. And he tells you a little something like this. When you purchase a home, you fund an escrow account with your down payment. You might also choose to fund that escrow account with money to cover your home insurance premiums and property taxes. Your mortgage lender will pay those vendors for you with the money you put into escrow.
And all of that is true, by the way, right? Nothing fishy going on there.
Right. Then the speaker goes on to explain that there's actually a secret second mortgage account in your name. This is because the bank that owns your mortgage leverages your credit using the promissory note you signed when you took out your loan. Supposedly, your signature gives that promissory note value, and that value gets traded and earns proceeds. Some of the proceeds go into that secondary escrow account. When you hear this, you think it kind of makes sense. Everybody knows that mortgages get traded and sold, and whenever you put money into a savings account, the bank invests it for themselves. That's one of the ways financial institutions make money. So it actually seems plausible that banks would do this with promissory notes. Anyway, here's the best part. Because it's your promissory note being traded and the escrow account is under your name, you are entitled to some of the proceeds. Sounds like a good deal, right? I mean, who wouldn't sign up for that?
The allure of easy money. It's a tale as old as time, and it's what makes scams like this so credibly effective. You've just navigated this complicated process of buying a home. You're feeling relieved and financially stretched. So when someone comes along and tells you there's a secret stash of money you're entitled to, it's almost too good to resist. But let's pump the brakes for a moment and dissect what's really going on here. First, the notion of a secret second escrow account is a red flag in the world of finance, where transparency is key. Banks are regulated entities, and the idea that they're secretly holding an account in your name without your knowledge, it's not just unlikely, it's probably illegal as well. Now, while it's true that promissory notes can be traded or sold, the proceeds from those transactions don't go into some clandestine account for the borrower. They're part of the financial institution's broader investment and lending activities. You, as the borrower, are not a stakeholder in those transactions beyond your obligation to repay the loan. Let's not forget the charismatic speaker. Often these people are not certified financial advisors or tax professionals. What are they? They're salespeople. They're skilled in the art of persuasion. They're trying to sell you a dream that can quickly turn into a nightmare. So what's the end game here? Well, their goal is to get you to pay for some sort of access to this mythical account or to buy additional services to help you claim your entitled proceeds. And once they have their money, poof, they vanish, leaving you not richer, but poorer, and often with a sense of betrayal that can be emotionally devastating. So listeners, the lesson here is to always do your due diligence. As I've always said, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And when it comes to your hard-earned money, skepticism is your best friend.
Apparently, the reason people don't know about this incredible money-making opportunity is because no one bothers to fully research their contract. You know, sometimes those contracts are like 2 inches thick. Nobody's really reading them when they sign them. And obviously, the banks wouldn't be as profitable if they advertised this. But according to the seminar speaker, if you don't claim that money within 3 years, which is the statute of limitations for tax returns, they get to keep your portion. So, of course, it'd be in the bank's best interest to keep this practice hidden as best as they can. Now, getting the money you're entitled to is easy. All you need to do is hire the speaker, and the speaker's going to hook you up with someone who could file an amended tax return for you. The guy at the seminar says that this is just one of the many loopholes the wealthy use to become wealthier, and there's no reason you can't do the same. Now, it's a good pitch, so you consider hiring him to help you get the refund he claims that you're owed. Unfortunately, Tom, it is too good to be true. None of this is real. It's completely made up. A secret escrow account tied to your mortgage doesn't exist. And if you fall for this lie, it could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars and get you into massive trouble with the IRS. Welcome back, everyone, to Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Dominique. I'm a CPA certified tax strategist. I have an interest in true crime. I have a degree in law, and I lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzinski.
Hey, Dom. I'm Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I've been admitted to practice before the U.S. Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor, and like you, I have a real interest in true crime. We decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies.
So, Tom, I actually happen to know a little bit about this subject today. I'm really passionate about it because we're covering a scam that I potentially could have fallen for myself. So around early, I think, 2022, I saw a TikTok video that was promoting this very scheme. And since it's something I had never heard about before, I had never heard of this term second escrow, I wanted to learn more. So I attended a seminar like the one we just described, and I was somewhat skeptical about what I was hearing, but it didn't immediately set off alarm bells. I thought, if this is real, it could be great for my clients, and it makes sense. I don't know that much about the banking industry, at least not, you know, how it works on higher up levels. So I looked into it further. I emailed the seminar host some follow-up questions and I called around to various banks. They told me that the second escrow accounts are in your social security number. So I was calling and asking them if they knew of an escrow account tied to my loan number or my social security number. And the people at the banks didn't know what I was talking about. So actually it was kind of embarrassing. But the fact that the seminar host never responded to my follow-up questions confirmed my ever-growing hunch that this was all a sham. And of course, I'm glad I did my own research, but it made me concerned because if I, an experienced tax professional, thought there was a chance this could be true, I can't imagine how susceptible the general population might be to scams like these. So today we're bringing you The Illusion of Easy Money, Unmasking the Secret Escrow Scam.
Our story starts around 2013 when two men named Aaron Backstrom and Arthur Daniels started accounts within a company that allowed them to create and electronically file forms with the IRS. They then started touring around the country to give financial seminars. And right off the bat, things are kind of sketchy, because according to court documents, they actually didn't use their real names. Aaron Backstrom gave talks under the alias Sharif Noble, and Arthur Daniels went by the name Mahif Bey. So Sharif and Mahif, or should I say Aaron and Arthur, often spoke to religious and spiritual communities. So for example, in 2015, they traveled to Atlanta and held an Establish Your Estate workshop for Zulu Nation, an esoteric spiritual community whose beliefs promote power, education and truth, freedom, justice, equality, work for the people, and the upliftment of the people. The community, which is largely made up of Black Americans, also seeks to fight against racism and white supremacy. These kind of groups were the perfect targets for Backstrom and Bey. I can imagine that they pitched this get-rich-quick scheme as something that could financially support and uplift marginalized communities.
So it was at seminars like these that Backstrom and Bey would recruit their clients. They probably also use these seminars to identify who would and would not be an easy mark. I bet they weeded out folks who asked too many questions or didn't have enough assets. And according to court filings, it was mainly up to Backstrom to determine who would be allowed to participate in the scheme.
After these seminars, they would email their co-conspirator, Aaron Aquarin, who held sort of a middle management position within this enterprise. He was the liaison between the clients and the head honchos. One of his main jobs was to collect intake information from clients. This included mortgage and personal identification information like social security numbers. It seems Aquarin was also responsible for collecting payments from the clients. Customers had to pay an upfront introduction fee, which, get this, was about $2,500. But that wasn't it. They were told they'd have to pay an additional fee ranging from $10,000 to $15,000 after they get a refund from the IRS. So according to court documents, Aquarin would collect the necessary info and upfront fee, he'd get a cut, and transfer the rest to Backstrom and Bey along with the client's information. Once everything was in order, Backstrom and Bey would email the client various tax forms and instructions on how to file them with the IRS. Then Aquarin took the client's tax information, including the client's W-2 and wage and tax statement, and gave it to their other co-conspirator, a woman named Yomari Febris. She was the one who did most of the preparation of the forms, and she simply received $500 per form prepared.
Jeez.
She filled out a form 1040X in order to amend their previously filed individual tax return. In one instance, She claimed a refund of almost $150,000. Now, this is not surprising. She also falsely declared that these forms were all self-prepared. She didn't admit to signing the return, which of course is against the law. A paid tax preparer must sign their client's tax returns. She didn't do it.
And because she's presenting this as a self-prepared return, she emails the paperwork back to the client, and then the client files it with the IRS themselves. But little did they know, the refund being claimed was completely bogus. So in addition to this, Baxterman Bay filed or caused to be filed fraudulent 1099 forms. They made it seem like these forms were issued by the client's mortgage lenders. So this is how the scam works. You can't just amend your return and say, hey, I paid in $150,000, give me a refund. So what these guys are saying is this refund is coming from your secret escrow account. But in order for the IRS to show that you have a refund due to you, they would create this 1099 form. And the form claimed that the lender paid their client almost $600,000 and withheld $150,000 of that in federal income tax. So that was all to back up the fraudulent sum on the 1040X. So they're just really pulling one over on the customer. They're trying to make it seem like there's this complex system that you don't know anything about. And I feel like they're preying on marginalized communities because maybe they don't know about how banking works. And at the same time, they're kind of backstage filling out these phony 1099 forms claiming withholding on it. And the IRS gets the amended return and goes, oh, okay. And they actually send the money back to the taxpayer. So you know what? The whole scheme actually resulted in some major windfalls for clients. Usually a couple months after all the forms were filed, the taxpayer receives massive tax refunds. According to the criminal indictment, one client received $151,195 from the IRS. And I imagine they were thrilled. So this particular happy customer paid $10,000 to Aquarin, and that was per their original agreement. Remember, they pay $2,500 up front and then $10,000 to $15,000 once they get their money. Aquarin took $7,000 out of that $10,000, and he transferred it to an account controlled by Backstrom. So it looks like Aquarin's take is $3,000. Poor tax preparer, she makes out the least in all of this. She gets $500. Febris gets $500 for doing an amended return. And the lion's share goes to Baxterman Bay. So I'm just picturing Baxterman Bay laughing their way to the bank. But it actually didn't last that long, because in July of 2015, the IRS sent a scary letter to Aquarin. And it advised him that his tax arguments were frivolous and had no basis in law. So he's nervous. Aquarin's not a tax guy. He forwards this letter to Baxterman Bay and Frembris.
From 2015 to 2016, the IRS kept closing in. Several clients received penalties from the IRS. I bet they were really frightened to hear they weren't actually owed six-figure refunds and they have to give it all back. Not to mention that by the time the IRS caught on, some of the clients probably had already spent the money.
Yeah.
So the making the IRS collect it probably put a good deal of them into debt.
Ugh. And, you know, ultimately it is the taxpayer that's responsible. They sign that amended return.
Absolutely.
And they're responsible for what it contains. So anyway, the feds are on their tail. Baxterman Bay, Aquarin, and Febris did not back down. Instead, Baxterman Bay compiled false information and they prepared kind of templated letters, which they sent to Aquarin. And Aquarin passed these letters along to clients so that they could respond to the IRS. Backstrom also sent an email to clients, and the subject line on the email was how to abate the frivolous income tax return penalties. The body of the email advised people to submit a frivolous tax submissions penalty reduction form in an effort to, quote, get your life in order and not be hounded by the IRS. Good grief. Another email told clients not to allow IRS agents into their homes. Subject line of that email, if an IRS employee agent shows up at your door, uh-oh. And in yet another email, Backstrom wrote in all caps, please remove my email when sharing this. This message will self-destruct. I mean, talk about leaving a paper trail. He's trying to destroy it, you know, behind himself as he's walking away.
But what's even more egregious is that Aquaron advised at least one client to move money out of their bank account so that the IRS couldn't access it. And Aquaron took his own advice, or should I say his girlfriend did. She's the one who did the dirty work of moving money out of accounts in Aquaron's name into accounts held by her and her minor son. Also, according to court documents, around this time, Backstrom and Bay started distancing themselves from communication with clients. So when things got hot, they started to leave them high and dry. And even though these fraudsters were well aware the IRS was after them, they couldn't help themselves. They couldn't stop scamming. They just switched up their methods. In 2016, Backstrom and Bay had a meeting with 20 managers, including Aquaron. At the meeting, they discussed restarting and revamping the scam. Backstrom told his co-conspirators to file returns with false Schedule Cs. A Schedule C is used to report income or loss from a business operated by a sole proprietor. If you're a tax professional, you know false Schedule Cs are the bread and butter of fraudsters.
Yeah, if there weren't red flags before, that definitely does it. According to the government, Backstrom and Bay ran this scam on at least 200 unsuspecting clients across 19 states. And you can also kind of see this formation starting where they are distancing themselves, Tom, from the taxpayers. You know, lose my email address, and they have these middle management people that are dealing with the clients so that they're not identified, you know, in the scheme. So they got 200 people to do it. The amended tax returns that were filed claimed refunds ranging anywhere from $100,000 up to $2.5 million. And according to the Office of Public Affairs, they filed or caused to be filed $40 million in fraudulent claims for false refunds. So they were pretty successful at this operation. They really sold a lot of people on this scam. There's other sources that state that the request totaled about $64 million. And there was an article in the Charlotte Observer, and that publication estimates clients received a collective $38.5 million total. In addition to claiming these bogus refunds on behalf of their clients, Bay, Febris, and Aquaron went even further in their crimes against the IRS. They filed claims for refunds for themselves on their own amended tax returns. And additionally, Aquaron and Febris failed to accurately report payments that they got from their clients on their own personal 1040 forms. Big surprise. And as for Bay, the prosecutors alleged that he made over $1 million due to his scheme. And of course, he didn't report that income as well.
Well, thankfully, the fraudulent four's reign ended for good in April of 2021. When a federal grand jury returned an indictment, they charged Backstrom, Bay, Aquaron, and Febris with conspiring to defraud the United States and aiding in the preparation of false returns. They also charged Aaron Aquaron with corruptly endeavoring to obstruct the due administration of the Internal Revenue laws. Needless to say, the penalties for these charges are serious, including jail time, supervised release, restitution, and other monetary penalties. Now, hey, Dom, if you were facing charges and punishments like these, what would be your legal strategy? Would you simply just plead guilty?
Well, I think it all comes down to evidence and how strong the case is against you. Unfortunately for these four, you know, they had copies of emails and they had videos with them explaining how this thing works. And you can almost see the actions of those involved that really demonstrate a consciousness of guilt. When we see things like Aquarin and Febris didn't report the payments that they got from the clients on their own tax forms, you know, why not? Why wouldn't they? If all this was on the up and up, why wouldn't they report the income? The guy, Bay, in charge, $1 million, he doesn't file at all, right? So, yeah, I think they probably didn't have much of a choice but then to plead guilty and hope they get a good deal.
Well, you know, when the government brings up a tax crime, they have usually such good evidence that the defendants are usually better off pleading guilty than going to trial. Because when they plead guilty, at least they likely can get a lesser sentence than if they went to trial. And like you said, they knew they had the income, they received it. So it's hard to show how they didn't violate the law by not reporting it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And if I've learned anything from doing this podcast, I've read a lot of sentencing memos, both from the defense and from the prosecution side. And they use that in trying to persuade the judge which end of the punishment spectrum he should land on, you know, whether, hey, they openly admitted this, they did it right away, they're saving taxpayer dollars, so let's give him a little bit of a break and sentence him under the guidelines on the lighter end of things. And exactly the opposite is true when people drag it through court. Hey, he drove us through court, and he kept denying. And so, you know, I think it can help you ultimately. And that's what these guys did. So in December of 2021, Aaron Aquarin was the first to plead guilty. You know what they say about the first to cave in, right, Tom?
They get the best deal usually.
They get the best deal, yeah. So he does it first. And according to his lawyer, he accepted responsibility. He cooperated with the government. He admitted and confessed. One of the things he admitted to was recruiting and assisting at least 50 clients. But all of these people were trying to recruit other professionals. And so one of the things they were doing, and I think this was important in to conceal the identity of Backstrom and Bay, they needed middle people and they weren't tax and financial advisors. So they needed to borrow that credibility from legitimate tax pros. And one of the things they pitched was, hey, here's a way that you could make an extra $500. Don't you want to make another $500 off of your clients? So he did 50 clients himself. He was willing and ready to testify against the other co-defendants in his case. And of course, his attorney argues for the lighter sentence. In Aquarin's case, that was 36 months. So that was kind of on the low end. And he also made a claim that if he'd never met Baxter and Bay, he never would have gotten into trouble. So they're finger pointing, right? Hey, it's really these ringleaders up here. They also talked about the fact that Aaron Aquarin was the sole caretaker of his elderly father. He's a new grandfather. He needed to help out his daughter. But ultimately, he got more than 4 years in prison. If he couldn't do the time, he shouldn't have done the crime. Now, Aaron Backstrom, remember, he's the alleged ringleader of the whole operation. He also pled guilty. They agree to pay full restitution to the IRS. What does that mean? Well, they're going to be saddled with this debt. He was also permanently banned from having anything to do with anyone's taxes besides his own. And his defense lawyer put together a really good sentencing memo. There were letters attached that said he had good character and a lot of family members who described him as kind and loving and caring. Of course, they're going to say those things because they want to have as light of a sentence as possible. The lawyer did say that Backstrom had an impoverished childhood. He was raised by a drug-addicted mother, and that's what drove him to a life of crime. But even with all of that, he was sentenced to 105 months in prison. And I think this part of the story really makes me angry, Tom. And that is that, especially if you take Backstrom, that comes from this background, he grew up in poverty. He was raised by an addicted mother. And now here he is trying to prey on people that are making an effort to educate themselves so that they can get out of that situation.
Right.
These are the communities that these characters preyed on, is to go into faith-based communities, communities like the Zulu Nation, where their goal is to really educate their people so that they, A, don't get taken advantage of like this, and B, learn how to change their situation. And he, of all people, should know how hard that is and how much work it takes to try to learn something that you've never learned before.
And it wasn't until a week before the trial that the last defendant, Mahif Bey, entered his plea of guilty. He agreed to pay full restitution to the IRS in the amount of, get this, over $38 million.
Oof.
He will never be able to pay that.
No, no.
Like Backstrom, Bey was banned from any association with tax preparation beside his own. His attorney tried arguing for a sentence similar to Backstrom's, citing that he was, quote, basically law-abiding prior to the incident. But the government argued against that because he actually had 3 felony convictions, including robbery with a dangerous weapon, trafficking cocaine, and trafficking in marijuana.
Thus, the basically, Tom, it's basically law-abiding.
Basically law-abiding. But the judge didn't really agree with his attorney. And Bey actually got the heaviest sentence of them all, 11 years. Now, as for our tax preparer, Yamari Febres, she also pled guilty. She was responsible for preparing more than 77 false tax returns, and that got her sentenced to 51 months in prison.
So let's just break that down here, because I think this poor Febres, she shouldn't have done what she did, obviously.
Absolutely not.
But she's getting paid $500 a pop. So what she took home after this deal was $38,500, and now she's getting 51 months in prison. That's crazy. Not worth it.
No, and I assume that she had some experience or training in tax preparation, and I don't know that for a fact. But the fact that she was entrusted with preparing returns for compensation put her in a position where people trusted her to do the right thing, and she didn't. Now, there were red flags from start to finish in this. The fact that her tax returns that she prepared were deemed self-prepared should have been a sign that nobody should have actually submitted them to the IRS.
No, run the other way.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, she was an important part of this scheme. If she didn't prepare the returns, the government wouldn't have lost a lot of the money in this case.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's some other takeaways as well. And like I said, I think the pyramid style scheme, we've got the 2 ringleaders, Backstrom and Bey, that are at the top, and they are recruiting people to interface with clients so that their name isn't out there as the promoter of this scam. Now, You'll notice that this is a recent case. They were just sentenced at the end of 21 and partway into 22. And that's when I became aware of the scam. And it certainly wasn't any of these four that pitched me on this scam. But I do have to say, when I see this pattern of reluctance on the person's part to make their identity known, why? Why do they want to keep their identity a secret unless they just are trying to avoid the IRS catching on to what they're doing? And to me, that's a bad sign and a big red flag.
And that's pretty much our story for today. Backstrom, Bay, Aquarion, and Febris are just a few of the many bad actors who are running scams just like the one you heard. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who will prey on the financially uneducated solely to enrich themselves. Now, justice was served in this instance, but there are many more con artists out there who want nothing more than to separate you from your money. Always remember, if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. And for tax things, if you ever have any questions or concerns, please be sure to contact a reputable, licensed tax professional. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, that goes for tax pros as well. You know, I don't claim to know everything. There's just too much to know about our tax system. It's incredibly complex. And, you know, I did some research. I heard something that was new to me. I had not heard of it before. And the first thing I do is start to research. And then you start to look for these patterns. You look for red flags. And again, a lot of times, more often than not, it's probably too good to be true. But you can always ask another tax professional, hey, weigh in on this. Are you familiar with this? How come nobody's ever heard of this so-called secret second escrow account?
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We're happy you decided to join us, and we hope you consider subscribing to the show and even sharing it with some friends who could use a Tax Crime Junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left and close them for good. Until next time, remember that every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.